The SBS Cycling Podcast is brought to you by Tanara.
Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast all the way from Toulouse. You may hear behind us the town is buzzing. It's absolutely stunning here in the south of France and Macca. What a stage today.
And, you know, it's only fitting that that music is coming from an Irish pub,
yeah,
and there is an Irishman in the yellow. I mean, how good is that?
and if you dig a little bit deeper, it's probably his Norwegian pop. Maybe imagine if it is.
Oh,
but it's a Norwegian that popped today.
Oh yeah,
Abrahamsson, what a win! We'll come back to this win in a second. But let's talk about the stage first of all. It was boom from the word go, and we were not expecting this at all.
No,
we
sort of weren't sure what we were expecting, yeah. Were we? There was, you spoke the teams and riders before, and I think a lot of riders were probably thinking it wouldn't be a bunch sprint. They were expecting a break or the climbs to split it up at the end. They weren't that long, but it went crazy at the very start. First hour was 52 k's an hour average. It was madness.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you say we were not expecting it, for me, it's because it's stage 11, is the day after the rest day, but it's also the day before stage 12. And why am I saying this? Stage 12 is Otakam, first day of the high mountain. So this is why I was surprised that it was so electric as a stage.
Well, you got the non-climbers, you know, the guys that certainly will not figure tomorrow, and the teams that won't figure tomorrow, so they have to go today. So, but still, I was saying to someone earlier, you know, I get amazed by the average speeds, but I hate to say this, I retired 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Speeds obviously have changed a lot in 25 years. When Simon Gerrans, who's only retired, what, 5 or so years ago, when he's shaking his head, and guys like Simon, who have only just retired, at the speeds, it's just, you know, it's gone exponentially, tripled. It's like it's tripled in the 5 year period, I think. It's crazy. Yeah,
absolutely. And of course, so we've said it, Abrahamsson winning this stage, absolute fantastic result for him, for the team, for Tor Hushov, which is a man behind the performance these days at UnoX. You have to be a little bit emotional when you think about the effort that team has done, has gone into this win.
Yeah, and it's good for the economy of the sport.
Yeah.
We need these teams to win. And when I say we as a sport, because, you know, they're a relatively new sponsor to cycling.
Yeah, and we remember when the tour started in Denmark, they were a Scandinavian team, not invited.
Yeah.
They were not invited to that team. They were invited the year after. So this is how short
it was. And sponsors come and go, sponsors come and go. So, no, it's absolutely... it's really good they won. You know, it's really... I would have preferred Jaco to win.
Yeah, of course, of course.
from a patriotic and, you know, a biased point of view.
Especially there's been a lot of emphasis on Jerry being here today.
So, but you know what? It was a deserving win. And I spoke to Maro Schmid fairly quickly afterwards. And he spoke really well, actually. And you know what? He was very complimentary of Abrahamsson. He said he was strong all day. He worked all day. And so he was... You know, I think he took it on the chin pretty well.
So I couldn't talk to Abrahamsson, but I talked to Tor Hushov.
Yep.
Let's listen to him. Tor, I mean, what does this mean for you? A lot of work, but what a result.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, this is, we get paid off for hard work and dedication from everyone. And we invested a lot on coaches and altitude camps and all these small details where we win no points. But now when you have a victory like this, it's amazing. So I'm so happy.
Well, yeah, were there a point when you saw Van der Poel coming back thinking, it's going to be a big one?
I would say every second. I was so nervous. But and he also showed how big sportsman Van der Poel was. He went straight to Abra and congratulated him. So now it's well-deserved to the team, to Abra, Jonas Abrahamsson, and also to the whole group. To staying in front a few seconds like this for the whole day, was impressive of all the... five guys in the front.
I've seen you celebrating, so I can't imagine how big it will be tonight.
I will not go to bed too early.
Thanks, Tor.
Thank you.
You're gonna love Tor Hushov. We when he was in his days in television, we shared a lot of hotels with the Norwegian television. They're so nice. Tor Hushov is just an amazing guy. He was an amazing rider.
Yeah.
What a fantastic win for him.
Yeah. No, he'd be. he'd be as wrapped as you know, when he had his own victories himself. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're embedded in a team like that, and you know, it's your national team. It's
yeah, well,
know, like it's Jaco. You know,
do you know? I realized today. I looked at the cards with the riders, and it's like no. They're all Norwegian.
Yeah, which they is pretty cool.
100% Norwegian.
That is really cool in itself. Mm-hmm. The fact that they can do that, field a team,
absolutely,
you know, strong enough.
What else can we talk about in this stage? First of all, there's one event, shall we say, the crash from Tadej Pogacar. What's your reading on this crash? He touched the wheel, but when the world champion hits the ground, it's never a good sight. It's never a good sight to see a crash.
Drama.
But it's a real drama when the world champion is on the floor.
There's a massive throng of media at the finish, and actually there was just a lot of people. It was crazy. And when he hit the deck, it was just like a whoo, went over the whole sort of crowd. And you know, we're watching obviously on a huge screen, sort of 200 meters past the finish line. So yeah, I mean, that's a racing incident. It's a racing incident. There, you know, there was no one really at fault. I think what happened, they were sort of, there was a bit of a snake effect in that group at the front. And I think Pog, as he was swerving in, they snaked out. And he's, once your front wheel goes over someone's back wheel, you're the rider that's going to crash. And in this case, it was Pog.
More generally, if we talk about rider safety before we carry on debriefing this this stage, are you satisfied with the level of safety there is at a race like the Tour de France for the riders, but also for the infrastructure? Because we saw Pog very quickly, he hit the ground, but he also hit the corner, the curb side of the pavement.
Yeah. I'll say yes, but now I'll throw a curveball, and this isn't a criticism. What about the guy that ran out on the course 50 metres from the finish?
Yeah.
Like, they need to rugby tackle those people.
Well, they did.
They did. That was insane. That's stupidity. You see that in any sport. There's people running on a pitch, a football pitch, on a cricket
clothes
ground.
At least he had clothes on.
Well, I would have preferred streaking. That would have made it a little bit more fun. But no, look, I think all in all seriousness, I am happy. As a former rider and someone now who's covered the sport, you know, since I've retired, there'll always be criticisms. Mm-hmm. There will always be criticisms. I think at the Tour de France, yes, absolutely. I think they do a great job. Can they always improve? Of course they can. It's a rolling circus. You know, the stadium changes every day and it's different every year. We know that. So it's impossible to get it perfect. I think what the challenge is in professional cycling is every race being to that level. And they're creating that now in, I think the UCI are creating this standard, this level. So I think that's what we've got to get to. But you know, you can't do it overnight. And we can criticise races. You know, we think back to was it Tour of Poland when the Dutch sprinter...
With Groenewegen.
Groenewegen sort of caused the crash. And the barriers, the way they flicked out, and there was plenty to talk about that. There's been a number of crashes over the years at Poland.
Jakobsen.
So there's been scrutiny.
Yeah.
So it's important that as a sport, they fix up these events. Sanctioning them, does that help? I don't know. I think what you got to do is work with them to improve. If they make mistakes, you probably got to find them on some obvious ones.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what they're starting to do now, the UCI.
What about the technology? So we saw, for example, helmets now, they've got this MIPS technology underneath.
Yeah.
So what about the increase of technology? Maybe, and will we see one day an airbag that would be mandatory? It's mandatory in MotoGP, for example. Could this be something in the next decade? And is it a stupid thought?
Well, I don't know if there is. Someone did a prototype airbag. I don't know if it was a joke or this is a couple of years ago. And I mean, I don't even know if that stuff's possible. But look, I think you talk about the helmets and all the other little things. And the other thing that, remember, it was discussed probably 10 years ago now, get rid of race radios. It's sterilizing the sport. You absolutely cannot get rid of race radios. The day they get rid of race radios, there'll be something happen ahead of the race and the riders won't be notified. And then they'll get criticised for it. So they're in a no-win situation. It's a double-edged sword sometimes. And, you know, as you know, I'm critical of the UCI on certain things. But I think in this case, I think they're doing their best. And you've got to remember, we are such a unique sport.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not on a pitch. We're not on a field. We're on open roads that get closed down the day before. And they, you know, they recce these roads. They look for danger spots. You know, look at... France is, you know, more than a lot of countries, probably Holland and Belgium, you can't draw a complete comparison because they're a lot smaller countries, but the amount of road furniture, on smaller roads in France is quite a lot. Not abnormal. It's just a lot.
It's a job and a half for the tour to remove them
before
a stage.
And they can't remove them all. It's impossible. So, no, I think they do a good job.
Okay. What does this crash mean for the race itself?
We won't know until tomorrow.
So is judgment on that crash will be tomorrow? How Pog wakes up tomorrow, how he starts the stage? Because it's a big stage, and we'll talk about it in the second part of the podcast. It's a big stage tomorrow.
Yeah, and I just spoke to our mate Andy from ASO, who does race radio. He said there was a they get the race radio stuff comes through. Yeah. They can't post everything, but he said there was one that came up, and I think they got it on the broadcast, but obviously we were outside at that point waiting for the riders to come. UAE said, Pog, can you update us? And he said, yeah, I'm okay, thanks. And thanks to the Peloton, respect, because they sat up and waited.
That's a big point as well to discuss with you and I. Total respect for the Peloton, total respect for Johan Vingegaard, which at some point he was 28 seconds ahead of Pogacar because Pogacar was on the ground and he didn't dread it. Yeah. They didn't attack. They respected the Pog. They respected the accident.
It just shows, you know, he's the best in the world.
Yeah.
Not just the Tour de France. At the moment, pretty much every rider is saying he's the best in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he is. He's amazing. But it just shows how well he is respected.
Yeah.
And so what you see, what we see from him is what you get.
Yeah.
There's no facade of Pogacar. Mm-hmm. That is the guy you see. He's a respectable guy. He's a generous guy. And aren't we lucky? We're not even in our sport.
Another stage where Van der Poel doesn't win it by 100 meters or so.
That was crazy. And you were saying to me, he's going to catch them a K to go. And you were right.
Yeah.
I mean, as in, with 3K to go, I was as right as you. And you were, you know, we didn't know. And it was on a knife's edge. And as you said, I liked what you said to me a K to go. I think you said he lost he got caught 500 meters a few days ago. Maybe he'll catch them 500 meters to go and win.
Just to make it even.
And there's part of us that wanted that to happen, didn't we? You know, because he's one of the greats of the sport. And we love the way he races. But again, we circle back to Abrahamsson and Maro Schmid. That was possibly their one and only chance. Mm-hmm. And one of them got the win. So, you know, deserving winners.
Is anyone that surprised you as a performance on this stage? I would throw a name, Van Aert. Van Aert did very well. And he was sort of free to go today, Van Aert.
Didn't surprise me, though, because his form's been looking good. We sort of expected him to be... to be there, didn't we? Him too, and Van der Poel. So, no, I think. Look, I probably say the guys in that front group that broke clear. I mean, the fact that they not all of them, only the two out in front survived, but they held off the group of Van der Poel, Van Aert, the Stars and Stripes,
Simmons,
DeLee. Yeah, that was a strong group.
Yeah.
And a couple of others for good measure.
And for some measure as well, the race radio, as you mentioned, the riders in that chasing group were told the winner is coming from your group, guys.
Yeah. Maybe that was the wrong message.
Yeah.
So they relaxed and thought, we've got time to catch them.
Yeah, exactly.
So it just shows the level, you know. And again, you mentioned Wout van Aert. You know, think about it for a second. He's in good form.
Yeah.
He was second to Milan, his stage win, a few days ago now. He's been on the move a couple of times. He was in the move today. We know he's world class. Okay, he's maybe not at the very, very best of Wout van Aert form, but he's pretty close. He hasn't won a stage.
Yeah.
That's how hard it is to win a stage at the Tour
de France. And when was the last time he won a stage? A while back.
Yeah, it was a couple of years ago, two or three years ago.
And he's been knocking at the door ever since. And
he's versatile. So you can argue... riders with his capabilities have got more chance of winning than others, but it is so difficult to get one.
When I'm in surprise to see Van Aert at this level, it's not so much about his performance, it's the fact that he was allowed to go for it when we know there's a lot of mountains ahead. Like we mentioned, the phase two of his Tour de France starts now. He will be a great help for Jonas Vingegaard in the mountains, but today, the day before the mountain, they allowed him to go. Is that confidence from the team, confidence in where they are at as a unit?
Yeah, you know what? It's a good question. It's a really good point.
It's kind of my job.
They could have really clamped down and go and said, you know what? The only way we're going to beat Pog, and this is sort of true, other 1%ers.
Yeah.
So they've given away 1% there.
We need everybody every time.
We need everybody every time. On the flip side, they say, we know how good you are. You're capable of going for a win today, and we know you're going to be good tomorrow. We know you're not a mountain climber.
Yeah.
So we're not relying on you in the last 10 kilometres up or to come. We're relying on you before that. So off you go. We still need a win because, you know, mm-hmm. sponsors still want wins. No guarantees we win the tour. So, but there's a good chance you can win today. So I get it. I get their method.
Sponsors-wise, is it better to have a stage win than a second spot on the podium?
Overall.
You walk away from the Tour de France second.
Which is
or
massive.
You walk away with one stage. What's the best?
Oh, no, I'd say second.
Second.
Yeah, it has to be.
Let us know what you think, members of the Catch Peloton, because I reckon opinions can vary on this one.
Yes.
Because you hardly sometimes remember who was second.
Well,
I'll
tell you what. If I put myself in a position of stage win or second overall, I'm choosing second overall, but I'm being greedy because I reckon I'm going to be paid more money if I finish second overall. Stage win would be good.
I know you so well, Mac. I know you so well. I knew you were going to
say. And it's not about the money, but, you know, on this occasion, yeah, maybe this time. Yeah. If I you know, went back into a time machine, second overall.
Okay. We take a short break, and then when we come back, guess who's back with us? Yeah, talking about the Giro Donna is Grace Brown, straight after this.
Tanara is Australia's leading alternative asset investment firm. From venture capital and private equity to public markets and credit, we proudly partner with business founders and companies to help them grow their businesses and create value for investors. Led by John Wiley, former chair of the Australian Sports Commission, our team brings deep experience and a shared passion for Australian sport and cycling.
Welcome back to the SBS Cycling Podcast. And now let's catch up with Grace Brown. She gives us her opinion and her vision of what happened last week. Because remember, Sara Gigante finished third of the Giro. Let's hear from Grace Brown.
I know everyone has been deeply locked into week one of the men's Tour de France, and fair enough. But I want to take a quick detour and talk about the women's Giro d'Italia, which wrapped up on Sunday. Heavy hitters lined up this year. Lotta Kopecky, Anna van der Breggen, Elisa Longo-Borghini, and Marlon Rusa. Early on, I felt pretty confident that Rusa was going to take control. Her form lately has been brilliant. And yes, she wore pink for a few stages, but in the end, she couldn't quite hold on. Van der Breggen looked slightly underdone, still building ahead of the Tour de France fans. Kopecky never really got going and eventually withdrew with back pain. It was Longo-Borghini who came out on top, not just with strength, but with smart tactics. On the final stage, she and teammate Silvia Persico attacked on a descent before the last climb, catching Rusa off guard. It was enough to seal the win, but was she the strongest rider in the race? I don't think so. The real excitement, especially for us Aussie fans, came in the mountains. Every time the road went up, Sara Gigante took off. She won stage 4 and stage 7 with pure climbing dominance, leaving the rest of the field behind. We've always known Gigante has the engine, but her career so far has been plagued by crashes, illness, and setbacks. She had iliac artery surgery late last year, and her recovery since then has been nothing short of phenomenal. Now we're seeing glimpses of what she's truly capable of, and I'm quietly wondering how much she might be able to push Demi Vollering when we get to France. Still, I know some people are asking, what if? As strong as she is uphill, her positioning in the bunch continues to be a weakness. Too often she's sitting at the very back or even a few metres off. And look, I get it. That scrum in the peloton can be terrifying, especially after the kind of crashes she's been through. But no one's handing out free passes in the GC racing. We saw the cost of it on stage 5 when she got caught in the crosswinds and nearly lost 2 minutes, and with it, any hope of contending for the overall. I really hope she can keep building confidence and find her place in the bunch, because she has the legs to become a true GC threat. For now though, we celebrate two brilliant wins, and the fact that she's back healthy and flying. As for what the Giro tells us about the upcoming Tour de France Femme, honestly, it's wide open. And that's how we like it.
So that was Grace Brown in her own clip that we embed today in our podcast. Third of the Giro, we said it, we say it again, what a fantastic result for Sarah Gigante. I mean, we have not really much to add to what Grace Brown has said, but from your point of view, I remember you and I, 2017, we saw a very young 17-year-old doing the crit in Melbourne going,
hey, teardrop.
And we did an interview with her and she was fantastic and we followed her ever since. That was Sarah Gigante and she's back. What a good news it could be for the Tour de France for her.
She'll be at the Tour de France, hands down. She will be at the Tour de France. You know, selection hasn't been made, but I think we can
safely
say...
I'd be surprised if she's not.
Yeah, she's going to be there and it's amazing. She comes back from iliac surgery, as Grace said, and this is where she belongs. And you know, there's no guarantees in cycling. You know, we see these young riders come through at young ages, and injuries, illness, setbacks, and sometimes you never reach your full capacity. So I think we're all just so happy for Sarah that she is now, and you know, she's making up for lost time, or she did at the Giro, and I think we have so much to get excited about, because let's remind ourselves and remind everyone, we've had an Australian woman on the podium at the Tour de France back in the 80s.
Yeah, it was back in the 80s.
Liz Heppel, amazing performance. I think she was second at the Giro and third at the Tour in the same year. Phenomenal.
We'll settle for third at the Giro and second at the Tour for Sarah Gigante.
And what we haven't had...
It's a stage winner.
In the women's is a stage win ever. Yeah. I think this could be the year.
No pressure, Sarah. We know you listen to this podcast.
And, you know, to take the pressure off her a bit, I think we're all reasonably confident we'll have a really good mix of Aussies at the race this year. And there'll be other Australians within their own right that can challenge for a stage win.
100%. Okay, we've got Otakam ahead of us, stage 12. You and I...
Are you drooling?
Well, yes, because you know how much you and I have debated on and off the mic about how much this stage can be a difference. Now, there's been a crash for Pog, so that changes my plans maybe a little bit. I still think Pog tomorrow on Otakam can actually make a big difference. He's not going to win the Tour de France there, but I think he'll make enough difference that when we look back at the 2025 Tour de France, we'll say the win was forged, was built, was constructed on the slopes of Otakam.
You've been on that wagon, haven't you?
I mean, you can testify here. I've been telling this for a little bit more than a month.
Yeah, so... Is this because you know that we're staying in Lourdes tonight? So you're going
wishful
down
thinking.
To the grot. And now, if you're listening and you're like, where's Lourdes? It's this small little hamlet, although it's not very small anymore. And it was there was a miracle there, apparently.
A long time ago, there was a miracle, allegedly.
Apparently.
Yep. And then, science
hasn't proved it as yet, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. but no comments on this. But it's a town that
it's a very religious town.
Very, 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 very religious.
Yeah.
No, I haven't gone over there. I actually strongly believe in my vision of this race.
So you don't need to dip your head into the water?
No, I don't. And maybe I'm wrong, but I reckon the Tour de France will be forged tomorrow on the slopes of Otakam.
Oh, it's going to be just to let everyone know, we go to the Pyrenees. We're in the heart of the Pyrenees. You know, a stone's throw away is the Tourmalet, Luzardiden, all these famous...
Bagnères de Luchon as a town.
All these amazing, iconic mountains.
And yes, we know one or two good restaurants in the area.
We do.
Les Deux Cols. No advertising.
At the bottom of
Tourmalet.
Tourmalet.
There's a fantastic restaurant. No advertising, but absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
But we're not going there tomorrow, by the way.
No, that's too far away.
Otakam, what can you say about stage 12?
Look, I think Wismar...
It's not just Otakam.
No, there's Col du Soleil. There's actually two climbs, but the main one being Col du Soleil. Prior to, which is sort of the backside of the Col d'Aubisque. I think Wismar will launch. They have to. And Vingegaard has to. And he is still behind Remco Evenepoel in the overall standing. So I expect Wismar to attack. And they have to. And this puts him in a tricky situation, because if he attacks and Pog is good and counters him, then he makes him, he opens his, himself up, you know, to a counter move from Pog. But what that means is, I think it's going to be a really exciting mountain. I think going to be a good finale.
A mountain stage is kind of always exciting.
Yeah.
On top of this, we should have a good weather, hopefully. Yes. It's been really hot in the area in the last couple of days. And when you think Otakam, you also think about images from the history.
Yeah.
There's been so many good battles, so many tours that have gone through Otakam.
Yeah, Le Monde, I think.
Yeah, Eno Le Monde, exactly. And that was 1985 or 1984, I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah.
But that brings us back to these days, Otakam.
Yeah, it does, it does. No, it's got some great history, and it is a cool climb. It's, you know, and it's a big open sort of green sort of space at the top.
Yeah,
yeah, it's pretty. There's not much there. There's only one chalet, I think, and there's not too much there on memory. But it's hard enough.
It means that we bring our own lunch up to the mountain.
Yeah,
we have to think about this.
So no canteen.
No, there would be
no canteen. Okay, no, canteen, by the way, people, is
actually, it might be a catering.
It's catering that is provided by France TV.
France Television, and it's fantastic.
And we get to eat it in the compound only. Yeah. So you've got to be part of the TV. What's on the menu?
We're not bragging.
No.
Do you know what should be on the menu? It should be mountain ham. Which is basically, in Italy, you would call it prosciutto,
right,
or prosciutto, but a smoked ham. That's sort of the area.
Oh man,
you know,
got
cured or smoked ham and some sausages. I shouldn't eat this, but so, that is delicious.
Well, okay. And to round, are we nearly done?
Are we nearly done.
Well, yeah. I think. Listen, we're 400 meters. This was my old. I say this every race I do lately, but this is true. I actually lived in Toulouse, as you know, for a season.
And 400 metres from here.
Here is the Capitole Square.
Yeah.
I think we're having, it's stinking hot, nothing better than stinking hot
cassoulet.
Weather.
Cassoulet. For whoever knows cassoulet, it's not the weather for it. It's not the weather for it, but we're doing it. We're doing it.
We are doing it.
Thank you, Micah. And of course, every stroke of the pedals will be on SBS tomorrow or tonight if you're listening to the podcast in the morning. It will be stage 12 of the Tour de France. Until then, it's bye for now.
The SBS Cycling Podcast was brought to you by Tanara.